Remarks on School Reform. An address to the Teachers' Conference in Brno in 1929. Our schools suffer from a lack of teachers with above-average incomes. Not everybody wants to compete and attain absolute perfection. A good competition needs perfect means of operation. A teacher, just as anybody else, can obtain such extraordinary means only by the price of competing for excellence. Public schools are not suitable for such competition. The best suited is a private school managed by the teacher as his own enterprise. Therefore, in most countries, private schools lead the way in the progress of pedagogy. It is obvious that somebody has to pay the high price for the teachers who have attained the greatest success in pedagogy, and that somebody is and must be the father. Our fathers, even the affluent ones, are usually willing to pay for the education of their child at the most 40.81 Czechoslovakian crowns per year, while a perfect education of a child in a technically well-equipped school managed by the best teachers costs just as much in thousands, that is, 40,000 Czechoslovakian crowns per year. People will compete enthusiastically in all spheres of human activity if the victory it brings benefits not only others, but them as well. Unfortunately, in our country, winning is not profitable for the teacher. The highest evaluation goes to the oldest teacher, not to the one with best teaching results. Our schools will not reach progress until we will have at least some educators who became rich by teaching and who are able to afford everything they need for their success and their scientific work. Progress in education depends on the same circumstances as progress in arts. Great painters would not exist if there were not patrons of art ready to pay a lot of money for great masterpieces. We cannot have great pedagogical art as long as we do not have fathers looking for eminent pedagogues and willing to pay well for their extraordinary achievements in teaching, just as it happens in the framework of private schools in other countries, where the tuition for one student costs as many thousands as our father is willing to pay in crowns. Students in public schools benefit from the progress achieved by the competition of private schools. Headmasters, just as much as the general public, benefits from the copy of a masterpiece reproduced by the printing press. I met once in Frankfurt an Englishman, father of a teenage son. I asked him why he was sending his son to study in England when they lived in Germany. "I consider German schools very good," he replied, "but I have looked in vain in all of Germany for a teacher who made big money from teaching. I want my son to become an entrepreneur and to create values. I am sure that even the best pedagogue cannot instruct my son about values without experiences of his own. Concerning teaching methods, I made the experience that it is a great mistake not to consider the child as the most important factor in school. As an example, I would like to cite books on arithmetics. When the teacher asks the class how much is 5 times 5, one pupil comes up with the answer and the rest of the classroom repeats after him that 5 times 5 makes 25. This is a collective teaching method, the cheapest teaching. For 40.81 Czechoslovakian crowns per year. But such method kills the computing sense of the children. Schools should teach children arithmetic, not senseless repeating of multiplication tables. Already a 4-year-old child knows how many geese mother owns. Those geese and the saved pennies, this is, the figures a child remembers because they are part of his daily life, should be the starting point for the teacher. I visited once a little village school where the teacher dictated the following problem from the arithmetic book. From 586 tons of potatoes, a starch factory produced 110.754 kilograms of starch. what was the percentage of starch in the potatoes? The fraction used in the problem make the solution difficult even for a grown-up because it complicates it considerably. Therefore, even the best pupil can make several mistakes with the decimal points writing it on the blackboard, although he might have calculated the same problem several times. For the whole class, it was a torture, not a pleasure. When they finally finished, I asked the teacher, where was the nearest starch factory? He replied there was none in the entire region, and that all the potatoes grown there were not even sufficient to feed the inhabitants. When I discussed that later with several teachers from the region, one headmaster told us a good joke. It was not only the pupil who made a mistake with the decimal points. Even the author of the book placed two decimal points in the wrong place. He made the starch content in the potatoes 100 times smaller than it actually is. On that occasion, we all agreed how fortunate it would be for the entire region if instead of a difficult example of a starch factory, the teacher could use a problem based on the daily life experiences of the children. If mother churned from 28 liters of milk 1 kilogram of butter, what was the fat percentage in the milk? That village, by the way, lived from dairy production. The children would count with understanding and pleasure and later discuss the problem at home with their parents. And when mother would again churn butter, they would count again and announce later to the teacher that their milk yields much more or much less butter than in the arithmetic problem in school. Not even the worst pupil would make important mistakes, and the whole class would follow arithmetics with interest and pleasure. Such instruction would be useful to children and parents alike, because it would convey to them the knowledge useful for their daily life. It would also enhance their earning potential and establish friendly relations between school and family. The money spent on schools would thus immediately return where it came from, namely to the citizens.